whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We're all kind of on the same page. Want to talk a little Cavaliers?
Sure. Yeah. Let's do it.
Sorry, the coffee pot was blocking the mouse for me to get to Danny. Danny Cunningham is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. You know him and love him because you hear him on the air here. Locked On Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, the inside shot on Substack as well. Morning, Danny. Thanks for waking up, man. Appreciate you.
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
We're good. He's killing me. I made a pot of coffee here, and it's not very good. It's just, it's okay.
What did you do wrong?
I it's just watery. It just tastes a little watery.
He keeps trying to come getting better as the morning's going on, Danny.
It's all the about worst. The creamer.
Come on. Don't be that guy. Just accept that it's bad if it's bad and move on.
It's not. No, I'm just telling you, I've had bad coffee before, and I've had coffee that has literally put hair on my back. And this is, it's just not that. I can't explain it. It's not. And
well, it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I didn't get the good mix, that's all. Like, I should have gone in there, and they had pretty good creamer. I brought that in with special because I knew I wasn't going to be able to stop. So then I didn't get a good stir in there, and so it got a little watery on the top. That's all I'm saying. I mean, like, these guys are going to hold this against me forever as, like, the worst coffee guy ever. But I'm not.
Yeah, I would for sure. I would definitely make sure to do that because once you make a bad pot of coffee, there's no coming back from that.
Yeah, you know when you're describing it as watery and not that bad, that's not a ringing endorsement to drink Andy Baskin made coffee.
But the good part about it is actually, I'm going undercover. It's really good, and I just don't want Daryl to have any because Daryl,
I'm not going
to
drink it. Daryl anyway.
Without caffeine is bad enough. A little caffeine and Daryl, really, really bad.
I've actually cut caffeine out of my diet. You'd be surprised. This is just natural energy.
That is great. Danny, can we talk about the Cavs for a second? Donovan Mitchell, he's going to be a starter. Your thoughts on that? And look at that. Kenny could be his coach. Kenny Atkinson could be his coach on one of the three teams that isn't the Rising Stars.
Yeah, so I mean, Donovan, I think, is a very deserving starter, and he finished second in the fan vote behind LaMelo Ball, who is not named a starter. Donovan was first in media vote, first in player vote, and I think it's really cool that he gets this honor, considering that this is, by like counting stats, not the best season of Donovan's career, but I think if you watch the Cavs, you know that he still, at least in my opinion, has been the best player on what has been the best team in basketball, and he has willingly taken a step to the side so that Evan Mobley can elevate his game, so that Darius Garland can get his game back to playing at an all-star level. And I think that this is sort of a recognition of him saying, okay, you know what? I'm a really great basketball player, and I can go out and I can score 30 points any given night, but winning is going to be the thing that matters most to me this year, to the team this year. And I think that all of that is being reflected with him being named an all-star starter. Second time it's happened for him. I think it's a very deserving honor for him.
Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jarrett Allen, in my view, all deserving of all-star recognition. What are the odds all three make it? And if they don't, which one do you think gets snubbed?
So I think if they don't, it will be Jarrett Allen that doesn't make it, although I do think there's a path for him to make it. And the way that the reserves work is there will be three front court player reserves selected, two guards, and then two wild card spots. Evan Mobley is a lock, and he is of the three front court starters in the East, Karl Anthony Towns, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Jason Tatum, all three deserving guys. Two of those guys got 95 media votes, which is how many media members voted on this. Karl Anthony Towns got 91. Evan Mobley got the other four. No one else got a media vote to start other than Evan Mobley and the three guys that are starters. And I think that is something that is going to align with how the coaches, because those are the guys that picked the reserves here. I think that's going to align with that. So I think Evan is very safe as a first-time All-Star. Darius is interesting because the guard position is loaded in the Eastern Conference. But I just mentioned that media vote with Evan. Darius finished third behind Jalen Brunson, behind Donovan Mitchell. He was the next guy. He finished, I believe, tied for fifth in player vote, which is definitely a little weird. Like, there are guys that don't actually play NBA minutes that get votes from other players to be an all-star. So I just think that's kind of silly. But I think that both of them will ultimately be an all-star. Jarrett has a path because if there are only three front court players that are selected, Evan Mobley is a lock to be one. I think Boston's Jaylen Brown is a lock to be one. And then you start going down the list and it gets real thin real quick. Like Paolo Banchero, was next in the fan vote. He's only played, I believe, 12 games. Franz Wagner, who, when he's been healthy, has absolutely been deserving of an all-star appearance, but he's only played 20-something games after he just missed 4 weeks with the torn oblique. Like, I just wonder if they are going to reward Jared and the Cavs team's success here, partially because he deserves it, but partially because who's the next best option to be a front that third front court spot?
It's a good question. It's a good play. Yeah, I hear you. Danny, let me just switch gears just a little bit more on this All-Star stuff. What do you think of this new format?
I don't necessarily love it. I think that if the All-Star game is going to work, it's not going to be because a format changes. It's not going to be because they found this cool new wrinkle. It's going to be because the guys care. And if the guys don't care, it doesn't matter what you do on Sunday night at All-Star weekend to make the game try and work. It's not going to work. It's about getting a buy-in from the players. I just don't see how this format is going to do that. And you know, we have had years where it's been good. We have had years like last year where it's been kind of an embarrassment. And I just think that unless the players really buy in and unless they care and unless they treat it like something that is just even a little bit closer to a real basketball game other than a let's just shoot 100 three-pointers and dunk and that's it, until that changes, I just don't see how it's going to be good no matter what the format is.
Danny Cunningham, Locked On Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, Inside Shot on Substack, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Danny, Cavs back at it tonight. They've got the Sixers. The Rockets come to town Saturday for a rematch. Cleveland 3-3 in their last six games. When do we hit freakout mode?
If they start losing games in April in the playoffs, like this is, I mean, they've lost three games out of their last six. And I just, especially when Evan Mobley's not playing the way he did not play in the game against Houston the other night. Like, I just think that this is such a different team when Evan Mobley's not on the floor for any stretch of time. And I think that, you know, the Cavs have gotten off to such a great start and they've been fantastic. And they were never going to continue, at least in my opinion, playing at a 73-win pace the way that they were. But they still have the best record in basketball. They've built up a good cushion. You know, I don't know if you've necessarily been paying enough attention to the rest of the league, but like Boston is 10-10 in their last 20 games, and I think people are starting to have worries about them. But The fact that the Cavs are 3-3 in their last six, I just don't find that big of a deal. Like, could they have won against Houston the other night? Sure. If Darius Garland makes those free throws, they win, but you probably look at that game and say, you know, I don't know that the Cavs deserve to win that one because they didn't play very good for the first three quarters. I think that defensively is where they need to get better, and then, you know, there are nights like Wednesday night in Houston, where they have an off night offensively, where I thought they missed a ton of open shots. I think they shot like 31% from three or something like that. And when they do that, when they don't have a good offensive game, when their defense is not at the elite level that we're used to seeing it be at, well, they're going to end up losing some games. And that just sort of happens. If this were happening, if they were playing like this, you know, 2 weeks before the playoffs, might be okay, this is going to raise an eyebrow here, but the fact that it's happening in the middle of January, I just don't find to be a big deal.
You mentioned the Warriors 73 win pace. Cavaliers starting to fall off that. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, do you?
No, I don't, because this is such a long season, and as long as the Cavs get the first seed in the Eastern Conference, I don't think it matters what their record is. Now, I say that, and if they get the first seed in the Eastern Conference and they win like 52 games and play at a 500 level the rest of the way or slightly below that, then yeah, that might be an issue, but this is a team that is on pace to win 60-plus games if you check out all the betting sites. The live total for wins for them is like 63 or 64 and a half, depending on where you look. I do think it's important they finish with the first seed in the Eastern Conference, potentially the first seed in all of basketball, because when the playoffs arrive, I think the Cavs are really going to want any game one that is played to be at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, and more importantly, any game seven that is played to be played at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse instead of, in particular, TD Garden in Boston. I think that is the really big deal to watch out for. But the way the Celtics are playing, the Cavs have such a big gap right now. I'd be very surprised if that doesn't happen. I will say, you know, I do think that the franchise record for wins in the season, which is 66, set in 2008-2009, I think that's in jeopardy. But I think if they beat it, it's probably 67.
Danny, I want to go back. Like, there were the missed free throws, and I feel like anything we say negative about this team, and I'm not trying to be negative at all, is nitpicky because it's been such a great season. It's been fun. But the thing I really like about this team is that you can go back and look through, just a sheet, and it'll tell you who the leading scorer was, and it's either Garland or Mitchell or Mobley or Allen. Like, and it rotates all the time, and I think that's super important because they're playing team basketball. The thing that kind of got me at the end of the game the other day was you can see where guys sometimes want to go back and play a little bit of hero basketball at the end. And I'm not saying that's a trend, but the thing that makes this team great is their ability to move the basketball. Any concerns or thoughts about that when we get into clutch time or we get into a seven-game series, that hero ball mentality, and I'm not saying that guys are doing it on purpose. I think that's just the way AAU and the way that they've come up through the ranks. This is kind of what guys think at the end of the game sometimes. But any concern about that, because the hero ball is not what has gotten them to where they are right now?
No, because I think that what they did offensively, I agree with you, like the end of game offense against Houston was not very good. Mm-hmm. But I think that the way they look at the end of that game offensively probably looks pretty different if Evan Mobley's on the floor. Like, sure. I just think that the ball moves a little bit better. And I'm not, like you're right. It wasn't a good enough, despite the missed free throws. Like, even if he makes those free throws, the end of game execution was not great. But I just think that I don't want to necessarily judge what their end of game offense looks like when in a game that Evan Mobley wasn't there and they didn't play very good offense in terms of shot making throughout the entire night. So I just think that, you can nitpick, and when they are 36-7 the way they are, anytime you say anything that's less than complimentary, it is a little nitpicky because they've been so good and there just aren't very many negative things to say about this team. But I just think that the end of game offense is going to look better with Evan Mobley on the floor, because think back to the game they won against Oklahoma City and Cleveland. How did the end of game offense look like then? Evan Mobley is the one that scored arguably the biggest basket of that game, and that not have him available, I just think changes how they look.
Cam Johnson seems to be everyone's favorite for the Cavaliers to target at the trade deadline, which, by the way, is rapidly approaching, February 6th at 3 p.m. How do the Cavs pull that off?
I think if they were to pull that off, and I don't expect them to, because I think that ultimately they will get outbid by a team that has more first-round picks available. I think that they would have to trade their 2031 first-round pick, which they cannot put any protections on because it is so far into the future. So they'd send an unprotected 2031 first-round pick. I think Jalen Tyson would probably have to be part of that package, because the Cavs would have to tell the Nets that Jalen Tyson, who the Cavs believe has a bright future, and I certainly like as a young player, they would have to convince the Nets that, hey, he's just as good as a first-round pick, and then they'd have to find some other pieces throughout the roster that match in terms of Cam Johnson's salary, which is around $20 million. I think ultimately, guys, though, there are teams that have been linked to Cam Johnson that have multiple first-round picks available, and the team I look at is Oklahoma City. I don't know how bad Oklahoma City wants Cam Johnson, but if they want Cam Johnson bad enough, Cam Johnson's going to be a member of the Thunder, because they have, I believe, like 20 first-round picks that are available to be traded because of the moves that they made during their rebuild, including one with the Clippers where they acquired, I think, 7 first-round picks and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for Paul George. So I ultimately think that are the Cavs interested? Sure. Who wouldn't be interested in a guy that's 6'8" and a 43% three-point shooter and a good defender? But ultimately, I just don't think that there's enough left in that war chest of draft assets for them to be able to swing a trade for him.
Danny, as always, appreciate the conversation. Locked On Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, and, of course, the Inside Shot on Substack. Thank you, Danny.
You got it, guys. Have a good day.
All right, have a great weekend.